You're listening to the New World Order, episode 357. My name is Klaatu, and today we are continuing through the G section of the AP software series in Slackware. If you're new to the show, that means that we are looking at literally every binary executable on the Slackware distribution. If you're not running Slackware, that's okay. You probably have access to these binary executables, these applications, through your distribution's software repository. So whatever I mention here, you can probably find for yourself. Before I get started with that, though, I want to take some listener feedback, because I do have some listener feedback. I've got two little bits of listener feedback here. The first one is from Matthias, and he says, the future Windows admin at my place of work was not able to edit a PDF when using a tool the company had paid for. It came from some authority, and the company was to pin it on their walls. I need some professional tool, he claimed, so I gave it a try. LibreOffice was able to import the PDF into its draw or impress component. The edit went fine. And Matthias said that the PDF that he had to edit was sort of a form, if you imagine like an HTML form. You know, it had some question and then a blank that you would fill in. So he was able to edit it and do whatever he needed to in LibreOffice. And that's great feedback. I have found that to be true. LibreOffice does seem to do really, really well with PDF manipulation. I think it is the libpoppler library that makes that possible, if I'm remembering correctly. And I think have I used that before? I don't think I have used that before myself, because I'm usually doing different things than I would need to do from LibreOffice. Like I'm very frequently editing metadata or chopping it up and adding inserting pages and stuff like that, which I guess I could do in LibreOffice, but it's just more efficient usually for me to do with PDFTK. But it's great to hear that LibreOffice came through. The other little bit of information here is from Ken Fallon, and he was referring to the episode in which I was talking about how sort of surprised I was that I accidentally got a bunch of people using free software to play some games online. And he said on his part, and indeed in a couple of instances he's aware of, Mumble specifically has not been performing very well. It's been very crashy and has been causing problems. And while I will take that as, you know, general feedback, I mean, it's certainly not useful feedback, I guess, for me as much as it is for Mumble. I mean, that's the sort of thing that if we want an action from this comment, then it would be a bug report with Mumble probably, right? So that side of it is not useful, but I think it's important to note and significant to note when software causes problems. I will, however, say that, what was it, last week or the week before? It was over the weekend anyway. And so I guess it would have been the week, just this past weekend, not this weekend, just the one before. Then there was a conference, a geek gaming conference, that because of COVID-19 and the way that the region is being hit with it, and it is not really being handled all that well. So the conference had to exist only online, and it was as with many conferences lately, it's just one of those things. The pandemic causes things to move online because of social distancing. So the conference was online, and for the first time, because it was online, I was able to attend it. I wasn't able to attend it quite as much as I wanted to, but I was able to attend, and they were using Discord for their audio. It was a gaming conference, so you had to talk to each other, because it was a tabletop RPG conference. So you had to talk to each other, and the way that they did that was through Discord, which is a non-open source. It is a closed source application that happens to be compatible with Linux as well as Mac and Windows. So you can sign on, sign up, and sign on, and you get onto the server network. It's a little bit like you might think of it as IRC, you might think of it as, you know, any chat application, but they also have voice components. And I will say that, you know, 9 times out of 10, there was at least one person in every group that had some kind of problem with the process. And that's not a commentary against really anything other than to say, getting people together in a consistent and reliable way with a lot of different systems involved is difficult. And that's just a fact. So I would love to see us as a great computer community, open source and non-open source. I would love it if we could solve that problem. I really do. And I don't know what the solution is, because it does require a lot of human intervention, this process. You know, there's hardware on the end of each computer that has to be configured for that computer, and that gets difficult. It's almost as if, though, and this is a thought experiment, but I would almost wonder what would happen if there was some, and gosh, this sounds horrible, but pretend like, for a moment, there was a specific connection just for audio input. Not even the 3.3 millimeter or quarter of an inch, eighth inch jack. Not even that. I want it more specific than that. So it's a connection that only works for audio input on computers. And computers ship with this connection, and so you can only connect one thing into it, and that is an audio input device. And maybe there's like one audio input device sold. So there are no choices in this matter, and there's no way to screw it up. And when you plug it into to your computer, your OS is hard-coded to recognize this as an audio input device and to make it the default audio device across all open applications, or heck, all applications that open at any point on your computer. And that would be maybe a step in a direction. Probably not the right direction, but maybe one towards consistency. Because it's just that tough, you know? It really does seem to be that difficult. And I don't know who to blame. I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know if it's user error, if it's drivers, if it's applications. Who knows? A little bit more pointed about Mumble is that I have been using, just as point of reference, I've been using a flat pack of Mumble on a Slackware 14.2 system. That's what I have been using most frequently. Now, I do have a flat pack of Mumble installed on my RHEL laptop as well, RHEL 8. And in both cases, although I really would feel most comfortable speaking about the Slack rolling, because that's the one that I use 4 times a week for about 2 hours at a time, I can say that it's been performing brilliantly, no problems. So, I don't know. It's weird. But it is a problem, I think, across many different boards. All right, that's the listener feedback, so let's get started with the review of software. So the first, or rather, software packages. So the first one that I want to take a look at is a GhostScript related package, which is GhostScript Fonts. That name is a little bit of a misnomer, because it actually doesn't contain fonts. It contains information about fonts. So it's got AFM, PFB, and PFM files. I don't know exactly what each of those different formats does, but I know that generally we could say that it is an early Adobe PostScript. I don't even know if it's related to PostScript. I think it is to an early PostScript implementation by Adobe, from Adobe, where the AFM, for instance, stands for Adobe Font Metrics. So its point is to provide kerning information, turning and letting and all that other stuff, information about a font that is being used on a printer in a PostScript file. So it is metadata of sorts about a specific set of fonts. OpenType fonts now just includes that stuff in the font file, so there's no need for AFM, PFM, and all of those files. Why they're included in the version of GhostScript that is included with Slackware, I don't exactly know. And I took a look at, so AFM are text files. You can do a less on an AFM file, for instance. Here's a less /user/share/font/type1/Z00304L.afm. And it tells you that it is, that there's a comment here generated by PFA Edit. The creation date of the comment was back in 2002, December 25, 2341. So almost midnight on Christmas Day of 2002. Font name, URW Chancery L. And full name is URW Chancery L, medium italic. Family name, URW Chancery L. Weight medium, copyright blah. Italic angle is fixed pitch. Lots of little metadata type things like that. You can look at that file yourself if you're really, really curious. And the PFM and PFB files are binary files, so you can't quite look at them exactly the same way. Although you can a little bit. You can look at you can look for strings in the PFM and PFB files, but it's a lot less, I would say, less informative in general. So I'm assuming, and so the list of the, let's look at, just grep font name in all AFM files in that directory. So you get a list of all the fonts that it covers, and it's an interesting assortment. It's a lot of Adobe fonts, URW Gothic, URW Bookman, Courier, Century School, something or another, Charter, Courier again, Courier 10 Pitch, different than Courier, some Dingbats, some Luxies, Nimbus, Palladio, I guess that's not Palladino, it's Palladio, Standard Symbol, Utopia, and Chancery again. So there's a couple of different files there, and it could be that these are just kind of the standard PostScript, I don't know, fonts or something, and that's why GhostScript wants to cover them. I'm not really sure. That very well could be the collection of sort of default fonts from Adobe, though, for all I know. But again, I could be wrong. So, because, I mean, Luxie isn't an Adobe font, for instance. Luxie is, it was designed for Linux, for X Windows System, or I should say it was designed for X Windows System. I don't know that it was designed for Linux, but it was designed by it's free software, so it's certainly not an Adobe font. So yeah, I'm not 100% sure why those AFM packages or why that set of AFM files are included. And I don't know that they are ever used in real life from GhostScript. But there you go, that's what that package is. It's a set of font-like files or font data distributed with at least the version of GhostScript that was included in Slackware. For all I know, the newer versions maybe drops it. I don't know that for sure. I'm speculating. So the next package is much more interesting, in my opinion. It's GPhoto, technically GPhoto 2, but we'll call it as the package is called, which is GPhoto 2. Never mind. So GPhoto 2-2.5.10 is what ships with Slackware. And if you look at the package, it's deceptively simple. You look at packages, GPhoto 2. It says libgphoto2 is a cross-platform digital camera library, and gphoto2 is a command line client for it. The website is gphoto.org, and user bin gphoto2, and the rest is pretty much, I think, translation files or something. I don't know. Yeah, locale. I think it's just translation files. Didn't really look at them. But it is a very simple, singular little application. There's some stuff with scripting that you can do, which I've never explored. So I think the most interesting thing really is the command itself. Because for the longest time, I saw gphoto and assumed it was some kind of old GNOME photo application, like maybe a GUI or something. That's kind of what I figured. And indeed, if I just kind of do a quick search in my application launcher, if I type in gphoto, an application gets offered to me to digital camera configure camera, K-A-M-E-R, which is some kind of KDE camera interface. So not very interesting on the whole. It's something that I probably think, and you might think, something that maybe doesn't really matter that much to you. And as it turns out, it's a pretty darn interesting application. It can do, well, it can do it in theory quite a lot with the camera of your choice. You're limited by obviously what it supports. And you can find that out with gphoto 2 dash dash list dash cameras. Plural. And you probably want to pipe that through less now that I've typed it and hit return. There we go. And it has quite a bit of, it's got a really, really long list of cameras that it supports. And so if you know the brand of your camera, you may even want to narrow it down with a grep. So instead of doing less, I'm going to do pipe, and I'll do a grep. I guess dash I, and I'll just type in Samsung, because I know that the mobile device that I have handy here is a Samsung device. So let's see if I get any good hits here. It looks like there's a whole line of Samsung-supported devices. Some things that are embedded, it looks like, into other devices. For instance, here's a Google Inc. for LG Electronics, Samsung Nexus 4, 5, 7, and 10. And so on. So there are lots of things like that might, you know, be related, but not an exact match. And then there's other stuff like Samsung Galaxy models, MTP Samsung Galaxy models, MTP plus ABB, and so on. So you got lots of different things to choose from. Some of them are quite generic, like Galaxy models. That seems to be pretty all encompassing, versus something quite specific like Samsung YP-K5, YP-M1, YP-P2, and so on. All right, well, it turns out that the camera that I have access to is listed here. And to see if it detects my camera, well, first of all, I need to plug in my device, right? So I would plug in my little mobile device here, USB-C to USB, whatever that is, B, I think it is. And then I'll do a gphoto 2 dash dash auto dash detect to see if it picks up that camera. And it looks like it does. It says here that there's a camera connected to USB colon 002 comma 009. So it obviously picks up the camera. But now let's look and see if it knows what abilities my camera has, or rather what abilities it knows are supported from gphoto 2 to my camera. And the command for that is gphoto 2 space dash dash abilities. If you don't want to do the whole word abilities, you can just do a dash A. And it says abilities for camera. It tells you what driver it's using, or what it detects your camera has. Serial port support? No. USB support? Yes. Capture choices. Capture not supported by the driver. Okay, so I can't capture from this camera to this computer. If you have a camera that has that support, then you can do all kinds of cool stuff. You can control your camera through gphoto too. So you can take snapshots, you can capture audio, you can capture video, and all kinds of things like that. Configuration support? No. Okay, we're not doing so great here. But finally it says, okay, so we can delete selected files on camera? Yes. Delete all files on camera? No. File preview thumbnail support? No. And file upload support? Yes. Honestly, that's the thing that appeals to me, file upload support. Because I think anyone who has a mobile device will probably agree that unless your mobile device has some kind of fancy interface with your computer, such as KDE Connect, and I think there's a GNOME Connect type application now, or maybe some kind of just, I don't know, built-in support for to act like a normal USB device, that sort of thing, then it's sometimes absurdly hard to get files from your computer over to your camera. You can try to do it with a Bluetooth, but Bluetooth is painfully slow, and it's often more frustrating than it's worth, and so you may just not want to go about doing that. There's also sometimes a problem getting files from your phone to your computer. I mean, the number of files that have been tunneled through Google Photos or Google Drive or Dropbox or, you know, whatever else there is out there is just, it's got to be ridiculous by now, because people just can't get their stupid data from one device to another, which I think is one of the greatest failings of probably modern technology. I mean, it's just silly that we are carrying around mobile devices and find it difficult to get a file from a device that is sitting on our desk to another device sitting on the same desk. That's a real pity that that's a problem. Now, there are some really good applications that you can get through F-Droid to find, to basically open up a little server on your phone, and then you go to that location on your computer, on your local network, and you can download files from your phone. That's certainly the best solution for getting the files off of the phone to my computer without going through some weird internet service that I've discovered myself. But to get a file from the computer to the phone sometimes is quite painful. No more now that GPhoto 2 has been discovered. So GPhoto 2 has an option, and if I do a --help, one could see it, and that is the downloading, uploading, and manipulating files. Now, there's a bunch of stuff in there. There's list folders, list files, make directory, remove directory, and so on, get file, delete file, you know, stuff like that. And as we've seen through the --- abilities, your device may or may not support certain, you know, any one of those options. So if you want to delete all files and your camera thing says doesn't support it, then that's not going to work for you. But it did say that I could upload a file. So I'm going to grab a file here, an EPUB file, Pagana d20.epub, and I'm going to try to upload it to my phone. Now, it's going to fail the first time, but that is a planned failure. So I'm going to do GPhoto 2 --upload -file, and then the path to Pagana d20.epub. And it gets back a whole big error, big scary looking error. It says, error, you need to specify a folder starting with /store_xxxxxxxxx/, and then a bunch of other stuff about debugging and such. Okay, well, that's one of those beautiful and unhelpful error messages, because, I mean, it gives us kind of a hint, but it doesn't exactly tell us what we need to know. So you might think, okay, well, I'll specify that folder then, because that's what it told me to do. So we'll do the gphoto --upload -file path to the file, and then we need some kind of file, right, for a folder rather. Well, we don't know what that folder is. Okay, no problem. Gphoto --list -folders. That is in the downloading, uploading, and manipulating files list in the help section of GPhoto 2. It tells me that there are two folders in folder slash. There is store_0001001 and store_0002002. There are zero folders in folder 001, and there are zero folders in 002. Okay, so that's, I now know that there actually are folders there, and we could do something cheeky like --mkdir equals test, and it gives me an error and says you need to specify a folder. So, in other words, in order to do anything on this device, apparently, you have to know You have to specify the folder that's for the destination, the target folder. And the way that you do that, even though it doesn't actually tell you in any of the error messages, it is you have to specify dash dash folder equals and then the path of the folder. So it's either slash, in my case, slash store underscore 0001 0001 slash, or all that except with twos. So I'll do it with 001 0001. So the full command again, gphoto2 space dash dash upload dash file, and then slash path to my begun@d28.epub file, and then space dash dash folder equals, or just dash dash folder, the equals is optional, slash store underscore 0001 0001 slash. Doesn't give me an error that time. So I'm going to look on my mobile device. I'll go to my file manager. And I'll just go to the normal storage location, which is just called storage. And there it is, begun@d20.epub, 672 kilobytes. Sorry, right there on my mobile device, just as promised. Okay, so now let's try something a little bit fancier. Gphoto2 dash dash make dir equals test, and dash dash folder slash store underscore 0001 0001. And again, it didn't give me an error. So if I go back out into my mobile device, go back to the storage, sure enough, there is a brand new folder at the top of the list called test. And I'm going to delete it from my phone because I don't need it, but there it is. That did at least do it. So that is Gphoto 2. You can also try, again, all of this is going to depend on the support that your device has. And you can see that with the dash dash abilities option for Gphoto 2. It'll tell you what's supported. So I guess we could try actually dash dash git dash file. I don't think that'll work though. I guess we could try git dash dash or dash dash git dash all dash files, and then space dash dash folder slash store underscore 0001 0001. Before I do that, I'm going to make sure that I'm in the same location. I am. Okay, good. So yeah, actually that worked. That pulled the file off the phone and onto my hard drive. So that's a success. That is good. So, in other words, if you've got a mobile device, if it talks over the MTP protocol, or in some other cases, ADB and such, then you can possibly interface with it at least to some degree through Gphoto 2. It will vary depending on support of the device. Your device may not even be supported at all. Might not even be an option for you. But if it is, it is a really, really powerful and little known interface, possibly, to mobile devices. I mean, it's talking to libgphoto or libphoto or something like that. So, I mean, I guess in a sense, it's not little known. It's something that's being leveraged throughout lots of different applications. All I know is that sometimes the GUIs seem to not cooperate, and it seems to be somewhat difficult sometimes, a little bit annoying. So if you're having a hard time seeing your mobile device on your computer, try Gphoto 2. See if sort of less is more. Sometimes just kind of pinging the device for a quick little bit of information seems to treat it. It seems to be able to get through some of the probably over complexity that's happening between the devices. And that has completely changed the way that I upload data to my mobile device. It's really, really nice. So take a look at GPhoto 2. Hugely, hugely helpful. Very, very simple. You just have to remember that it is very sort of specific as to a predefined file structure on the device. So you do need to sort of probe a lot before interacting. Get your abilities, get a layout of the, get abilities with dash dash abilities, get a layout of the file system with the dash dash list dash folders, and auto dash detect, dash dash auto dash detect first to see if your device is even there. If your computer sees your device, you would want to do dash dash auto dash detect. And then you'll want to do dash dash abilities to get a feel for what you're going to be able to do and not be able to do. And then, assuming you can manipulate files on the thing, either upload or download or delete or whatever, dash dash list dash folders. Those are your three really important starting commands for that. You can go whatever direction you want, and all that's pretty self-explanatory, I think, with dash dash help. That's GPhoto 2, and I think that's it for this episode. I think that's a pretty good place to stop, because that's a big one. You should go explore it and check it out and try it out. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Podcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network, usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is at Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, GNUworldOrder.info and SlackerMedia.info. I will see you next time.
Stop whispering.